Hello, I'm Anna Garde, Principal Consultant at Prospectus Executive Search Practice. We work in partnership with social purpose organisations to find talented and values-driven leaders and board members to deliver their missions. Welcome to our Leadership Impact series. This is the podcast where we explore the impact leaders are making through their work in the sector. Today we'll be chatting to Rachel Kirby-Ryder, Director of Income and Engagement at Click Sargent. When cancer strikes young lives, Click Sargent helps families limit the damage cancer causes beyond their health. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
It's so lovely to see you.
And you.
Congratulations, first of all, on winning the Fundraising Team of the Year, Third Sector Awards.
Yes.
That's amazing news.
Very exciting.
Really good to see that.
Yeah.
Really good to see that. And I feel like we've got so much to talk about.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start by taking you back to the beginning, if that's okay.
Yes.
So you started your career in advertising,
uh-huh.
and then you moved into fundraising, initially for Diabetes UK. What prompted the move into the charity sector?
Well, it's quite interesting. Yeah, I get asked that quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it's always the interview question you get.
Yes.
Why did you move into the charity sector? And I always feel that it's a very, cliched answer of I wanted to do something which made me feel better about what I did for a living. And so I worked in sales and I was pretty good at it, but I got to my late 20s and I thought I can't keep doing a job that I don't really enjoy. I'm gonna be working for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I really want to do something that I feel very passionate about, and it's going to give me more. It's going to give me a sense of self-worth I'm not getting
doing
the job I'm doing. At the same time, my partner, who's now my husband, his mum had just passed away from breast cancer.
Oh.
So we decided that we wanted to do something to really as a cathartic way of grieving. And we decided we'd do a big event, fundraising event, and for a breast cancer charity.
Oh, wow.
And of course, we were going to do it together. It was going to be a really good opportunity for us to do something together as, you know, as a couple. We just moved in together. Thought it'd be really exciting. And I did all of it. But I loved it. And I just thought, this is really exciting. It was so much fun. I really enjoyed getting to understand a little bit more about the charity. And I decided then that the skills that I have from sales were exactly the same skills that you needed for fundraising.
Exactly.
So I decided that actually, if I was going to make the move, this would be quite an exciting time to do it.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand a lot about fundraising. And this gave me an insight into it being a career, because I hadn't really known it was a career.
Of course. Yeah. Most people don't.
No one. I mean, even now, I think we have as a sector and as fundraising leaders, we have a responsibility to go out and talk about actually that fundraising is a profession.
Absolutely.
And it's actually a really fantastic profession to get into. And there's lots and lots of opportunity. So I decided to make the move and use my skills, transfer over. And that's when I got the job at Diabetes UK.
Yeah.
And then I've never looked back. And I can't actually imagine working in another sector now.
Yes, I bet.
Yeah.
And what that other trajectory would have been had you carried on.
Yeah.
Funny to think of, isn't it? So you've progressed in your career to direct deliver at two national charities, firstly with Samaritans and now with Click Sargent. Did you always want to be a leader? And did you feel that you had the attributes to lead?
I think I just evolved into being a leader. I don't think it was something that I specifically thought I want to lead. I want to be a fundraising leader. It just evolved that I was quite ambitious. I wanted to manage teams. I really enjoy managing people. And so that just led me into moving to being a team leader, so then moving to be a head of team. So it just was, it was more of evolution rather than by design.
Yes.
And I just kind of went with it. And partly it is about managing people. I really enjoy doing that. But it's also because my skill set, I think, has always been one of being more of big picture thinking, thinking about plans and being quite innovative and strategic rather than being
about the detail.
Yeah, about the detail or getting into that kind of analytical thinking, despite coming from an engineering degree, which you think I would be more yes. inclined to that way of thinking, but I'm not. It's more natural for me to think about the big picture and the strategy and push forward. And I generally, in terms of my leadership style, I very much lead from the front. I like being part of a team, but I actually specifically like leading teams.
Yes.
So that's generally my leadership style. And so it's just kind of evolved. But I would say that I've always been quite ambitious to do well. And I, you know, there is that drive for me to want to lead teams, departments.
Have there been any challenges in that for you as well in those transitions?
Yeah, I think at first I just didn't really think about it. I just went with those opportunities. But I think looking back now, having been a fundraising director for quite a long time, and having spent a bit of time over the last couple of years on leadership development, which I didn't really do when I first became a leader, I just kind of just bumbled along and thought, well, I think I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
And I think because I'm quite confident, I could do that. But actually, having done a bit of leadership development latterly, I have kind of started thinking about a little bit about my leadership style, but also about those difficulties that I think I possess, which maybe hold me back a little bit.
Right.
I definitely have recognised that I do have an element of imposter syndrome, and I know that there are a lot of women in the charity sector that do.
Absolutely.
I think there's just a lot of women in society that do.
Absolutely.
And more than our male colleagues' experience.
Yeah.
And I definitely can look back and feel there were times when I would walk in a room and I would feel that I wasn't as worthy to be there as other colleagues.
Yeah.
And maybe I am very opinionated and I'm a decision maker, so I like to be part of the conversation, but I would be talking and my head would be questioning whether what I was saying was stupid.
Wow.
And so I've really recognised now that I did have a bit of imposter syndrome, and I do think it wasn't really something that was ever recognised or even discussed years ago, whereas I think now people are much more aware that there's quite a lot of women, working women, who do feel that and
Absolutely.
Maybe don't push themselves forward for opportunities.
This is it. Yeah.
And I think that I just, so there's one thing really sticks out to me, which I'm so grateful for Samaritans for seeing opportunity in me, because when I became a fundraising director at Samaritans, I was 6 months pregnant. And I don't think there are many charities, even in the charity sector, which is very family friendly and it's very female dominated.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's many organisations that would have given a permanent fundraising director job to a woman who was 6 months pregnant.
Yeah, agreed.
And I went into that process thinking, I'm never going to get the job.
Wow.
But it's good experience for me to go.
Yeah.
I was an internal candidate, so I decided that it was a really good opportunity for me to kind of present my vision for what I felt like we could do and what we were potentially missing out on. And so that's why I went into that process. But I walked in thinking, I am not worthy to be here, but I'm going to do it anyway. And and it took a lot for me to do it. And I was really surprised when they gave me the job, but it's brilliant. And it enabled me to kind of to get onto that leadership platform, which I don't think I could have done in a different way. And it also made me incredibly loyal to them.
As
an employee.
Yeah.
And I stayed for 5 years to be a fundraising director there. But I'm still incredibly fond of the organisation.
But I
do think that that's a period that I thought, yeah, I've really experienced that kind of fear of walking into a room and feeling like I was going to be exposed as being this fraudulent person who thought that she could do the job, but really she couldn't.
Which is amazing knowing you. I can't actually believe that, because I just feel that, you know, you've had this fantastic career, you've had this
trajectory of growth everywhere you've been. Samaritans, I think, increased income by 45%.
Yeah.
ClickSergeant year on year. And I was going to ask you what you attribute that to, but do you think that almost makes you work harder, that sense of imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I do. And I think partly because you're always really worried you're going to get found out.
Sure, yeah.
That's just how you feel when you have imposter syndrome. So yeah. I always feel that I've just got to work that much harder, or I've got to be that much better to kind of ensure that I don't get found out. And the other thing I just think, which is a bit of a tendency that I have, is that I give myself a tremendously hard time.
Yes.
And that goes back to not feeling worthy of being there.
Yes.
And I put that down to the fact that we talk a lot about diversity, lack of diversity, especially within fundraising, but within the charity sector as a whole, but fundraising is especially bad. So there's a really big movement around that at the moment, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
We are far too white, and that's not acceptable when we don't represent the communities that we serve. And that's really, really disappointing. So it's really important we talk about diversity. But we should also talk about inclusion.
Yes.
I am a working class girl from Essex.
Yeah.
I'm the first person in my family to go to university. And I have always felt that the charity sector is tremendously middle class.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and quite significantly private school educated. And,
yes.
And I'm not saying that whether you believe that's right or wrong.
Yeah.
But when you are a working class girl from comprehensive school and you walk in to rooms where it's full of, you know, people who went to private school or and they have this natural confidence, sometimes that can exacerbate how you feel or not feeling good enough. And that feeling of never quite being good enough or giving yourself a hard time that it went wrong or something wasn't quite right just is a very natural tendency. And it's something that I can really recognise in some of my staff.
And in terms of, you know, developing your staff, I think one of the things that's noticeable is you made a significant change a couple of years ago with a big restructure. Why was that important?
So when I came to ClickSergeant, the fundraising income was plateauing and starting to fall. So it was on a downward trajectory. And I think we had to put a new strategy in place and looking at how the income was coming in and looking at the evidence and the analysis of our fundraising portfolio, it was really obvious that it was really transactional. So we were spending a lot of time, money and effort on acquisition of new donors, but they were giving once and then attriting. And so that kind of transactional fundraising approach was really costly. So when we started looking at our return on investment, it wasn't as good as it should be. And actually when we're looking at our donor base, we just weren't keeping people for very long. And also the other key aspect was that we didn't have a significant amount of supporters who had a connection to the cause, which just seemed really counter to who we are.
Absolutely.
And the fact that if people have experience ClickSergeant service delivery, they are incredibly passionate about the services that they receive from our social workers. So it just seemed very strange that was our fundraising, how our fundraising portfolio is made up and our donor base is made up. So so looking at all of that, we started working with teams to develop a new strategy, which was based on relationship fundraising. That was the underlying philosophy. There's nothing revolutionary about that, but it was more around how we can engage new supporters and take them through a supporter journey that meant they were part of us.
Yes.
They became into Team ClickSergeant and that they would stay with us for longer. And that entry point didn't have to be an income generating ask. It could be volunteering, it could be campaigning, it could be volunteering. I think I said volunteering twice. Or it could be that they were a service user family or they'd experienced our services in the past and they could tell us their story. But that entry point would enable us to have a conversation and a relationship relationship with them that would take them through from a point of them doing a fundraising event or giving a direct debit through to their legacy. That's the journey, because yeah. they then see themselves as part of us as a charity. To be able to do that, it would mean that the fundraising teams would have to work more effectively together, because actually, it doesn't matter where you come in yeah. to that click sergeant journey. It was about how we took you through that, that kind of stewardship approach. And so it was the only way that was going to work is if the teams work collectively. So this is where we started talking about this one team culture. Now, one team now is one of our values as an organisation, but at the time it was
new, actually. Yes,
really new way of working, yeah. and the fundraising teams worked in these really distinct silos where they didn't even really know each other. They didn't sit in the same office. Bearing in mind, we've got an office in London, and we've got an office in Bristol, and we've got an office in Glasgow, and the teams didn't even really communicate effectively. So why the restructure came about, because the teams weren't functioning effectively to be able to deliver the strategy. They all the team, the whole directorate agreed that this was the strategic approach that we should be going for. We really engaged teams throughout the strategy development process. So they felt ownership of the strategy. So the frontline fundraisers really felt they owned this strategic approach. Mm. So they had this ownership of it. But unless we changed the structure, it wasn't going to work. So we designed, myself and my management team designed a structure that would enable us to really put the donor and the supporter in the middle, and then work out how we could help that stewardship flow by ensuring that the fundraising and engagement, which is our communications and marketing part of the directorate, would work in a more efficient, effective ways where they would be less siloed. And one of the ways that we could reduce that was by not just measuring fundraisers' performance on how much income they generated. So they all have targets, but we talk about having one target, because actually it doesn't matter where that money sits. It matters what the collective cumulative total of income is.
Yeah.
So that's why we put the restructure together. And it was really just designing a perfect structure from the bottom up. That was the theory. In practice, it doesn't always work like that.
I was going to say, now that it's sort of bedded in, reflecting back, what are your thoughts from it?
I think probably, there's two things. I don't think we went far enough. I think that because subsequent to that restructure we did 3 years ago, we've had to do a couple of other iterative restructures where we didn't quite get it right, because maybe we didn't really think about how we could bed in fundraising, sports and challenge events in a way. We still kind of kept them a little bit separate, and that's now kind of been brought in, so that fits and sits really comfortably with our regional engagement teams. So we've had to do subsequent restructures, and I think it's just because we didn't go far enough in certain areas. And the other reflection that I've had is how difficult it was doing such a big restructure, which created loads of new jobs. Obviously, we had some people that left the organisation, and we brought in a lot of new people all at once.
Yes.
And it was quite hard to, because you helped us do it. It's quite hard to recruit that many people all at once.
Yeah.
It was quite, we were being very particular about the types of
people
that we felt would come in and who reflected the culture of Click Sergeant. And that was quite hard to do. And then the other result of that is that after 3 years, we're seeing that we're now, we always said that we wanted to keep people for 3 years, and fundraisers generally tend to churn, especially frontline fundraisers. They were churning quicker than that at Click Sergeant, so we weren't keeping them for very long. We've managed to improve that. We're keeping our fundraisers for longer because we're investing quite a lot in their development. But then you've got this three-year wave where we're seeing quite a lot of people move on at the same time, which is at this point in time now is causing quite a lot of difficulty in terms of vacancies. So so we've just got to, you've just got to think about how you can mitigate against that.
Yes.
But the good result of it is that we are keeping fundraisers for longer. And I think people who are coming into the fundraising team are very quickly buying into our way of working and culture. And they see that as a real benefit for them and their career development. So it was a really positive experience. It was quite hard work at the time, but it, you know, if I put the structure that we had 3 years ago on paper next to our structure now, it does look very different.
No, that's really good. I think it is about that development and keeping people for longer, because you said that is a big risk actually for your fundraising team.
Well, fundraising and income within charities is built on your people and your processes. And if either one of them aren't working effectively, it's really hard to raise money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, let's talk a little bit about impact, because it's clearly important to Click Sergeant, and a big congratulations for winning the Best Use of Impact Reporting Award at the Third Sector Awards recently. You've just released your second impact report.
Yeah, the difficult second album.
Yes, I saw that. That was amazing. And I like you distinguishing it by that focus more on the service user voice.
So yeah.
Trying to proactively address that difficult second album. And you talk in it about the good, the bad, the ugly. So you're honest about what you've achieved.
Yeah.
But also what you didn't.
Yeah.
And what you're doing to address that. Where did the idea for this approach come from?
We have been talking. So Kate Lee, who is our chief exec, if anybody's had the luck to meet Kate, will know she is a bit of a force of nature.
Yeah.
Kate is a charity sector employee through and through. She's always worked in the charity sector, and she in the third sector, and she's incredibly passionate about it. But she has very clear views of what we should be doing better as a sector, which is brilliant. So she and I have been talking a lot over the last couple of years about how we felt, following all of the difficulties with Kirk and the Daily Mail and people's the loss of trust in charities, what we could do to mitigate against that. Because we've always felt having integrity as one of our core values and bravery is another one of our values, that actually we've always been fairly transparent.
Yes.
But we felt like we could push that because we didn't feel like we had anything to hide.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that we weren't doing things, or we weren't failing at some things, or we weren't we were getting everything right, because certainly we weren't. But we both felt that actually it was really important that maybe we pushed that.
Yeah.
And that could be something that we felt we were doing anyway, but we weren't telling people about. And it's something that we could really be known as for a charity, that externally we wanted to be setting ourselves apart to say, actually, we're quite happy to be transparent about what's gone well.
Yes.
Because we have to tell you about that. But equally, it's really important to tell people about the things that we didn't get quite right, or that we didn't quite achieve, or we were going to be honest about the fact that our fundraising ratios might not look as good as someone else's because we're 100% voluntary income.
Exactly.
And therefore it costs us quite a lot to raise money because we don't get any statutory income or any contract income.
Yeah.
So our fundraising ratios would look different from other organisations. And actually it's not about pence in the pound.
Absolutely.
It's the impact that we make as an organisation and how well we do that, and therefore the impact that we have on our service user families. Yeah. And so we wanted to tell that story. So the first impact report we did 2 years ago, we just wanted to kind of make a statement of saying, hands up, we're perfect.
Yeah.
And just by really telling the story of all the things that we said that we were going to do, and we just didn't, we couldn't do, because we didn't get right, we didn't have the money to do it, or we couldn't make it work, or we didn't have the capacity to really push it.
Yeah, of course.
And then the other key aspect is that we, as a charity, well before I started, we've talked a lot about only reaching 2 out of 3 children, young people who have a cancer diagnosis. So we're only supporting 2 out of 3, and we've always talked about that as unacceptable. And then two and a half years ago, we just had a conversation as a senior management team that said,
we've got to stop talking about this. Yeah. I frankly felt it was embarrassing going out and talking to donors who we had a relationship with for a number of years,
yeah,
telling the same old story, yeah, and not actually doing anything about it and, yeah, having a solution for it. So, so we just decided that actually we had to do something about it. And that starting that process was recognising that we'd never done anything about it, and actually we needed to say that was unacceptable. We didn't know how we were going to do it, yeah, and we were going to be honest about that. But we said we're going to start this process of working out why we don't reach, and then work out how we can do it. So that kind of pushed our thinking around. Let's just tell people that this is not good enough. We've not done a good enough job, and we don't want to continue in this way. We, yeah, want to kind of push ourselves to say we're gonna do some stuff differently, or we're gonna be honest about the fact that we've got to do something different. So so that started the discussion and the process, and so it just kind of pushed that transparency theme,
yes,
and that's why we really went for that. This year, we decided that actually we needed to push it a bit further, which, yes, is why we really wanted to kind of focus on it, focus on the fact that we wanted to talk about impact.
Yes.
Lots of charities do a really good job of telling people how they do what they do, or, you know, the outputs they deliver. So this is the service and this is what we deliver, rather, yeah, than the impact that it makes. Yeah. And we wanted to talk about why it was such a big issue, and this is the impact we were making.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to kind of take that bit in the middle out, because if you're interested, we'll tell you how we deliver it. We deliver it through an amazing social work team who are just the lifeblood of the organisation. We can talk about that, but actually, let's actually tell the stories of the service users that we've supported and the impact that that made to their lives, both during their cancer treatment and beyond, rather than us telling you the nitty gritty of the stats, yeah, which are very output based rather than impact.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's very true, actually. And it's interesting because you've obviously grown income whilst you've been there.
Mm.
How does that translate into impact for children and young people that you support on a daily basis? How do you sort of connect that impact, if you like, with what you're doing, raising money, with how that's going to impact that young person?
Well, I think when we developed our fundraising strategy, when Team One Target, we talked about it not being a strategy for the fundraising team. We talked about it being an organisational fundraising strategy, and that, yes, everybody in the organisation was a fundraiser. So so it was everyone's responsibility to think about how we could generate income and to be part of that.
Yeah.
And we couldn't do it without the whole organisation taking that approach. Conversely, we talk about everybody in the organisation creates impact. Everybody, whether you are, on reception, or you are, yeah, in the supported care team, you know, or that you're an events fundraiser, you all create impact by what you do,
yes,
because we are the enablers that help it happen. So, so we try and make sure that, firstly, that the fundraising team are really connected to the cause, and that's quite hard to do.
Yes.
Easier with the regional fundraising, yes, team, because they're out on the ground. We have linked all of our regional fundraisers up with social work teams, so they work collectively as a hub.
Yeah.
So they have more access to our social workers, but they also have more access to services and families, and they're talking to them about their experiences and their stories all the time. That's very different if you're, say, in corporate fundraising and you are sitting in an office. It's harder to get those stories. So, yeah, we try really hard to make sure all of our fundraisers get experience of going and talking to the social work teams, meeting families, and hearing those stories firsthand. And so tying those fundraisers to the cause, or really giving, yes, them as much opportunity to see it firsthand as possible, is really important.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think culturally we, yes, do well is that we have we have a really strong participation.
Yes, you do. Yeah, it's great.
Team, which or way of working, which is that we will bring service users into the organisation. They are part of the organisation. We have a participation networks where children, young people, and parents will come in, and they will work with us in terms of co-collaboration,
yeah,
of opportunities, campaigns, and events. Or we will talk to them about what we want to do. We'll take strategy to them. When we rebranded as a, we did the branding journey, and we rebranded 3 years ago. We did that in consultation with those families and young people who've got lived experience. Yeah. They are part of that process. When you are interviewing to be either a trustee or on the senior management team, you get interviewed by a panel of young people or parents, which is it's much scarier than getting interviewed by the chief executives, getting interviewed by a group of 3 young people.
And you did that as well.
I had to do that. Yeah. I had to do that, and it was really scary. And
they were so insightful, though.
Really insightful, and the questions they asked were amazing. But so they have a ownership of the organisation, and they feel they are part of the organisation, and they are. And everybody who comes into Click Sergeant is part of Team Click Sergeant.
Yes.
Even if you're only doing, you know, if you're one of our fundraisers and you're running one event, you might have not ever had any experience of Click Sergeant before, but you've decided you want to run a marathon and you've got a place and you're running it for us. Very quickly, you will feel part of our team.
Yes.
Because that is how we work, and that is, it's that kind of family approach. Yeah. Think that does make a big difference. So I suppose I'm not sure if that's answering the question, but I think it just means that on any one day, our fundraisers know how vital the work is that they do in terms of the impact it makes to children and young people with cancer. Yes. And as a fundraising director, I will consistently talk to my team about how much they've done to support children and young people, and really try and translate that into the impact that they're making, so they really recognise that income is so important.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is really important is that the fundraisers, in their approach when they're thinking about how they're going to fundraise, who they're fundraising from, and who they how they're carrying out their fundraising, that they we obviously have an ethical working policy, so they know how important it is to put children and young people at the middle, and to really think that they are they're at the center of everything we do, so they're mindful of that when they are doing fundraising, and they are mindful of the fact that we have this really strong integrity value that means that actually sometimes we have to say no, and that's okay.
Yes.
And they will be supported in that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that's inbuilt in terms of the fundraising approach that we take, that actually it's okay to say no, and we will support them in doing that.
I think that's really important, because for a fundraiser thinking, I have this target, goodness me, should I make this decision? Oh, I probably should, because I'm more worried about my target, as opposed to having that integrity.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's one of your values. Yeah. I think that's really powerful, actually.
Yeah.
And supportive.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I during the issue with the President's Club, I felt very strongly that I wanted all of my families, bearing in mind, we talked about the sector being very female-dominated.
Yes. Yeah.
Most of my team are, I think, the workforce profile of my team is 80% women.
Right.
And a lot of them are young women.
Yeah.
Frontline fundraisers, young women that are out there, very passionate about what they're doing and why they're doing it, because we do put the cause right at the heart of it. So really want to do everything they can do to get money in.
Yeah.
And I felt very strongly off the back of all of the hoopla about the President's Club, I never wanted my fundraising, any one member of my fundraising team, male or female, but predominantly female, putting themselves in a position where they were at risk. And we all have been in those situations before, and whether it's with a potential donor, or, you know, where people have felt uncomfortable, or they've gone to an event and they are on their own and they're quite isolated, or it's late at night and they're coming out of an event. Mm. And I just felt I had to tell my team it was okay to say no, and never to put themselves in a position where they felt unsafe, to always escalate if there had been a near miss.
Yes.
And so I sent a long email to my fundraising director, and then I put it as a blog on our Yammer site as well, to say, don't ever put yourself in that situation.
Yeah.
Our children and young people and families they go through a terrible time, and we want to do whatever we can to make sure we can deliver this service, but not at the detriment of your safety or your well-being. And never is it more important to put yourself in danger than it is to bring money in. So, so I felt like that was really, really important.
Yeah, very important to communicate that, especially when a lot of people are looking at what's come out of that and the Me Too reflection in charity fundraising. I think that's really interesting to know. And thinking a bit again about the impact side of things, you've been very honest in the impact reporting video that you did with your senior leadership team, which was amazing, about what you could have done better. And you mentioned that you wanted to continue to innovate, find new ways to bring in funds, ensure sustainability and drive income. There's quite a lot there. So as opposed to asking you exactly what you're going to do on all of that, what's the sort of plan going forwards to incorporate that?
So we are looking at this, some key objectives as a directorate. So my directorate is fundraising, but it's also communication, marketing, social media, and brands, press, PR. So we've got the engagement side of the directorate as well as the income generating side. And I think they're really important because they should integrate, and that works really well for us.
Yes.
Having those teams, directorate, working collectively together. So we know that we need to continue to push on being evidence-led. So we need to really, really understand and have better insight into our supporters, to know who they are, what they expect, how they give, what channels they use. We need to strengthen the voice of the organisation. So we've done quite a lot of work around the brand, and that's been excellent, but we need more people to know who we are, why it's important, and the impact that we make. So it's we talk about strengthening our voice, so really getting ourselves out there, really thinking about our messaging and how we can increase our profile as an organisation. For those supporters that we have, we really need to continue the improvement of the supporter journey. We do need to improve the number of service users that then come in to support us as an organisation, and how we start that conversation with those service user families is really important. We've got to do it at the right time and in a sensitive way, but we've not done it as consistently as we should do.
Okay.
And I came into fundraising through a cathartic grief process.
Yes.
And I know how important and how beneficial it was to me to do something when you're grieving for a lost loved one, or that you have an experience which is completely life-changing for you, which it is for parents who have a child who has a cancer diagnosis. You feel out of control, and this is something you can do to support. So we've got to improve that kind of journey. But that's all fantastic, and that's the sustainable bit that I was talking about. So we can be more sustainable as an organisation if we shore up all of that, and that we can bring in the level of income every year that we need to bring in just to survive and just to keep going and do what we currently do. But if we want to do more, then we need to bring in more money. And yes, we have been over the last 3 to 4 years. We have increased our income.
Yeah.
But if we're going to continue that, then we need to think about innovation, new forms of fundraising, new ways of income generating, different channels that we could use. We've been really slow to the past on things like digital.
Okay.
Then we have, as an organisation, generally we've been, I wouldn't even say we've been a fast follower. We've been a kind of kind of middling to slow follower. And we need to pick up that pace. We need to be thinking about how we can engender a culture where people know it's acceptable to try new things and to be innovative, and that's part of their job description. So this year we've given everyone within the fundraising team one objective around innovation, and that could be, we talk about innovation, but what we really mean is not just new, it's also continuous improvement.
The evolution.
Yes, yeah. How we can improve something that we do at the moment, that do it better, or improve the cost effectiveness of that, or kind of really drive the opportunity so it delivers more.
Yeah.
So every single member of our directorate has that as an objective, and they've got to think about what they can do to push that. And we're really trying to drive more innovative thinking from the front line, because to be honest, I'm not from a fundraiser, I'm not out on the ground, and most of the more creative ideas are going to come from the fundraisers up. And therefore I want them peppering us with ideas and really kind of pushing us to be trying new things. And innovation only works if you are in a culture which is safe and it's okay to fail.
Absolutely.
And that goes back to our transparency piece.
Yeah.
And when we talk about transparency, we're quite willing to say, this didn't work as well as we thought it was going to, or it didn't work at all. And I think it's enabling people to fail, but fail well, and not to feel that failure is, it's something that's going to be looked on as a detrimental reflection of someone's performance, because actually it's there'd be one or two reasons of why something didn't work. And then that kind of ties back to us being better at evidence and insight, that we should review why that didn't go well and take those learnings and reassess how we can make it work and reinvent it and continue to develop ideas rather than just shelf them because they didn't work first time.
That's it. There's two sides of the coin for innovation. The other side is risk, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's normalising that, that if you're going to push on innovation, there is risk. And how do you manage that?
Yeah. Absolutely. And what's an organisation's risk appetite?
Yes.
And some organisations have money, a lot of money, disposable money that they can invest in that. And so therefore their risk appetite is slightly larger. We don't. One thing I would say is over the last 3 years, we've grown income without growing our expenditure base. We haven't invested our way out of this. We have, we've taken the expenditure base we've had and just made it work harder.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to happen more and more, that there isn't the forms of fundraising or fundraising mechanics that you can do mass investment in anymore. Whereas it used to be that individual giving would be, you'd be able to invest a huge amount of individual giving and you'd be able to invest your way out. I think that market's changing.
Yes.
I still think there is room for investment in that area, but it's changing.
Yeah.
And so therefore, trying new things, test and learn is really important. So we need to be doing more of that.
Yes.
And I think we just haven't done it as well as we needed to, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. If I was being kind on myself, which I'm not, as I told you earlier, because I do give myself half time, when being kind on myself, it was because we needed to do the transition and the restructure and embed the strategy and embed a more relationship form of fundraising to a very transactional donor base. But on the other side of the coin, you know, we do need to be thinking about what's, you know, doing that horizon scanning, what's coming up, what are other organizations doing that we could learn from, what could we be investing in that would like start to diversify our portfolio a bit more. And that's been a little bit slower coming. So that has to now be a focus going forward in the next kind of 5 years.
Yeah, exciting. And in terms of your own impact, what would you want your legacy to be, the charity sector?
Oh, that's really difficult, isn't it? That's a really hard question.
It's a big question.
It's a really hard question for someone that has imposter syndrome, don't you?
But you mentioned, you know, you are hard on yourself, and there's something in there, isn't there, about being able to be kind of, to look back on what you have achieved.
Yeah. I suppose if I was going to look back and think about what I have achieved, I probably, my natural instinct would be, gosh, we could have done so much more.
Yeah.
And didn't quite do as much as I think it should have. I think if I was thinking about what I'd like my legacy to be, it would be more around, I'd like the people who I managed to feel like I was a really good leader.
Yes.
And that's sometimes having to make difficult decisions, and I might not have liked all the decisions that I have made, but to feel like I made those decisions for the right reasons. Yes. And that I developed them to be the leaders that they're becoming. Yes. So I love looking at my staff and the people I've previously managed when they suddenly get their next big job. And I think that gives me more pride than actually my own achievements, because I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
And look at what they've become, and that's fantastic. So going back to the fact that I love managing teams, I love developing people.
Yeah.
I'd like people to feel like that, to look back and think, she led us and we achieved and we developed, and that should be my legacy.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, thank you so much, Rachel. It's been great talking to you today.
Thank you.
This was Perspectives' Leadership Impact Podcast with Rachel Kirby-Ryder, giving us a great insight into her leadership impact. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to bringing you more in this exciting series.